Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah, A-Dream, A-Dream in the building, shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in, look,
yes, sir.
Look, we came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico.
So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down relationships to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
Hey.
Peace and blessings, you have reached the Bree Life Radio Show. And my name is Bree. And we're being joined today by Satellite from Mars.
Damn,
Mark,
this is unknown.
In Houston, Texas.
Crazy. This is crazy. I mean, you just have no idea. I swear, I'm calling in, and it's in. Your show is scheduled in 1 hour and 1 minute. Please call back 15 minutes before the show. I'm like, are you serious? I'm looking at it. It keeps telling me show starts at 9 Eastern. I'm like, okay. Wouldn't let me
well,
call
it wouldn't. It wouldn't be Terrific Tuesday if we didn't have some technical difficulty from Blog Talk. So we want to thank them for their consistency. You know I
you
love consistency.
Love hey, for real, man. You know, for real. The consistent Cracker Jack box. Man.
Well, you have entered the Bree Life Zone. If you didn't know, I'm your girl Bree from Planet Brooklyn, a.k.a. in the Crown Heights. And being joined with Mark in Houston, Texas. Mark said it. What's up?
Mark said it, a.k.a. Forrest Gump, a.k.a. Life of a box of chocolates.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. For real. That's what it is. That's
okay,
what
Mark,
it is, people.
It's Talk About It Tuesday.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Well, what are we talking about? You know, I got a lot of things on my mind right now, so
oh,
I can
boy.
Just, like,
well,
pick
well,
out. Like,
strap in, everybody. Strap
you know,
yourself.
I was looking at the TV. Why did I do that? I don't know, you know, why I look at the TV. Because my man Jesse Jackson Jr. is on full blast, you know.
Was he
kind of got whooped. He got whooped up. He got whooped up.
Whooped up?
Yeah, like, you know he's in jail. He's serving time, you know, in federal penitentiary
right now.
Oh,
Junior, or the third,
Junior.
Right?
Junior. Oh, the fifth or the sixth, however many numbers he is. You know, that's the one that's yeah. So, dude, basically, he got jumped on. They call it a little skirmish. One of my people got to me and explained to me what was happening. One of my people that got that, some connections behind the bars and the you know, Department of Corrections, the DOC, they said, yeah, he kind of got roughed up a little bit because, you know, his mouth. So they're moving him to another prison, which I thought was quite, special, you know. You know, I don't know, when a brother gets involved with politics, my suggestion, first of all, check his head. But if you decide to go ahead and do it, man, you better play by the rules. Don't be playing. When you get into politics and you're a black, brown, indigenous person, you just don't want to mess with these people, man, because...
Exactly, because you're coming into their game.
Agenda, well, their agenda,
you know?
Right, you serve them. You serve them and their agendas.
And
you're
brown, so they already assuming that we're going to have to watch him anyway. So...
Well, I don't know about that.
Come on,
I mean, they know they
come
need to be
now.
Watched. They know who the criminals are. They know we're not. They don't watch us too much. They don't rewatch us. They don't worry about us.
Game, no game.
yeah. It's not. I mean, it's just, man. Black politicians know. The only time it's a problem is, see, as long as you ain't advocating, you advocate strong. That's when they start looking at you. You don't advocate strong. And you know what they'll do? They'll like, you can do whatever. You can hang out. You can do whatever. You know, they be looking at, like, what's the show? The show Scandal. See, they be looking at Scandal. They think they're Olivia. And they, you know, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Olivia. Yeah, you know. And they think that they can do those things. And I got news for you. Stay tuned, because it's quite interesting when I see my young brothers who are very, you know, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed about the system. And, you know, they need to go look at the Matrix. That's all they need to do.
Yes.
Go look at the Matrix.
Tell us why the Matrix. I love that movie.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite movies.
I think it's the biggest metaphor of, especially for black people. Now, to consider the fact that the movies, the book that it came from was written by a black woman.
That's right.
You know. And so if you look at the whole Matrix, it makes sense. It's like black people. I mean, the whole brown people, black brown people, it's just really about us. Because, I mean, first of all, you see those individuals – dressed. They're all in black, but they're white, right?
Uh-huh.
Neo, all dressed in black, but the Oracle is a black woman. My man, what's his name?
Lawrence
Fishburne. Yeah, is black. Morpheus is black. So the energy, so this actually goes into my whole thing about the brown-black emotional grounded experience. We are the feelings of the nation, of the world. We are the feelings of the world. I believe people want our feelings. They get our music. They take our slang. They love what we have. They want to harness it. They want to use it. They try to figure it out. Some of their greatest inventions, they got inspiration from our energy. So when you look at the Matrix, you see, Neo is a guy that wakes up and sees what's going on, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
So you got the red pill and the blue pill. Anyway, you know which one.
I don't know
if
it's the blue pill.
What color was it? I can't remember. What
I don't
the
know
pill
if
color?
It's blue. I don't remember.
I
don't know if it's blue, though.
I thought it was the red and the blue. Come on now. It's the red and the blue. Don't mess me up.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, the red pill and a blue pill. And I think it was a blue pill. I know it's got to be. But anyway, basically the whole issue is it's the red pill and the blue pill. Yes, it was. I love my technology. My technology keeps me, because I'm getting old, so I be feeling like sometimes I forget I need to do something, maybe to exercise myself or something, so I can remember better. I don't know. But the red pill and the blue pill, that was the deal with the Matrix, you know. And the whole issue is to become, to not two things, to believe and not see. Blind faith in the system. The moment you wake up and you see that there is no benevolence in the system, but only malevolence, that they do not care about you. Michael Jackson had a song. We know that song, you know. They don't. They don't. You know, and it's a system that's not beneficial, and it's a stressful system. And in that system, it just causes you to look at the horse and the carrot. I always tell people the whole system is created like a pyramid, which is not as a beneficial thing for you, because when you see a pyramid, it's narrow at the top, broad at the base, and the illusion that you can be the one is always an illusion that they want to keep you believing. You know, I saw this movie this weekend that Woody Harrelson was in. It's called Now You See Me, I think, Now You Don't, something like that. And It's a tripped out movie because you got these magicians that came together and they put off this big old heist. But the whole movie always kept you trying to figure out what was going on and who was involved. But at the end of the day, some of the people, or one of the persons in particular that was doing the chasing, was actually involved in the heist, involved in a big hoax. And it was basically always, I always want you to look at something else so I can do what I'm doing. You know, it's like sleight of hand. Everything
right,
is sleight of hand.
Distracted.
Right, always about a distraction. So you have to ask yourself, whenever you see big events, when you see somebody harping on certain points, so forth, for so, what's the distraction? Like, for me, religion is a great distraction. It's one of the biggest distractions. And you can take your pick which religion you want to get up under, but it's a distraction most of the time. I just think they all are distractions, because It keeps you looking away from who you are in this space. It keeps you wanting another place and not making this space the place. You know, like you came from, it has pieces like, you know, we come from the earth, we go back to the earth, so to speak, but then they got this other place that everybody wants to ascribe for. So you always feel like, you know, my life is what it is, but I'm going to go to heaven one day, or I'm going to go to Valhalla, or I'm going to go to Shangri-La, or I'm going to go to, you know, paradise. You pick your religion that got you going somewhere else, and they keep you looking somewhere else. But your nature is here. It's not somewhere else. You're connected to here, not somewhere else. But we like to talk about the somewhere else and how bad it is here. So my thing is, if it's as bad as it is here, did anybody ever think about, like, well, let's try to make this place better? You know? No, go away. It's like, it's the same thing in our neighborhoods. Neighborhoods are bad. What do we want to do? Move away. And then what happens? That's a distraction. Bad stuff happening, neighborhood, move away, and what do? Take the neighborhood back. Again, it's just things that you open your eyes and you see. But I want better for my children, so I'm going to move into the suburbs. I'm going to move. Well, that's what I want you to do. You know, and most of our cities are dealing with unbelievable congestion. So folks got to travel so far back and forth. So now I move you further out. Again, this is nothing new. We do it. It's like we're lemmings. You know, and somebody was telling me something about a lemming. It's like if you ever see the lemming go over the cliff, they're still climbing up. So when they drop, they drop trying to go in an upward motion still.
Right.
You know, and which tells you that they're just moving without, you know, thinking and they're reacting. So to me, I keep thinking about us emotional people, us people who have created the music. Because even I think about when we go to our churches and our various other places of worship, our music and even the presentation by the preachers are very rhythmic. And many times when we leave church, we don't remember what the preacher preached about. But we remember the emotional experience. Because we'll talk about how good we feel when we left, but we don't remember what was said. Because what was said is probably so secondary. Language is messed around with all you want. But our emotional antennas pick up and know how to get recharged, and we know when we feel better. and we know that we desire to feel better. Even when we go after drugs or alcohol, it's for a feeling. We want a different feeling, you know. And our feeling is our vibration, and we try different ways to change the frequency, you know, increase the vibration. We do things to try to change it. And like I was saying, you know, alcohol, weed, all that kind of stuff, it's not the craziest, worst thing in the world, because if you go back and think about many of the ancient cultures, they used various things to try to have a greater spiritual experience, like, you know, whether you use peyote or various other types of elements and different types of roots to free you up, because everybody, all of those people knew about how inhibited we could be. And in order for us to really see, we needed something to assist us in becoming uninhibited. You even hear people when it comes to sex, how they in order to release themselves and be free in a sexual experience, they may drink, take a drink or do something else, because they know they're inhibited and they know they don't want to be inhibited. So they do something to try to uninhibit themselves. Even, you know, they talk about alcohol being courage juice. You know, again, we know how many things in this space. We have this collective anxiety. You know, I was just doing, and I challenge anybody, look at abductions. How many kids were abducted in the 70s versus now? Because remember, you had Wayne Williams down in Atlanta, and you had various other, you know, it was crazy back then, but people would tell you that, I think it's worse now. Look at murder rates. They think murder rates is even worse now. But I can prove you. I mean, we and you had this argument one day on air about murders in New York. In like 1991, there was 2,200 some murders. You don't remember the last time it was over 1,000 murders in any of the major cities. Ain't nothing. People will go crazy. But remember, that was at the height of the crack wars, and almost all your major cities had hundreds of murders doing that easy, going to close to the thousands. You know, it was crazy. But now, technically, the cities are safer. I was thinking about the Fort Hood shooting. That was the other thing I want to talk about. It's horrible when anybody gets shot and killed. But it would be, they would be going crazy if they had the number of deaths that took place in a 24-hour cycle in New York City, Houston, Texas, Chicago, Illinois, Miami, on a daily basis on one of those military installments. They were talking about Fort Hood. They said, you know, this is the second time in 5 years. We have to really look at what's going on there. I'm like, the second time in 5 years that people have been killed, but beyond that, there wasn't really no murders on there. Okay? So what? Wait a minute. I don't know a time period we could say a second time in 5 years somebody got killed in New York and Chicago and Houston. Second time in 24 hours, you know, or something like that. You know? And so what's the music? I feel the music.
That's
the
interesting.
Music? You busting out the music
that
on
just,
me.
That just happened. Hold on.
Yeah, I dug that.
Aretha Franklin's Do Right Woman.
I thought that was my background music.
That just popped
that's what
up.
I right. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it, well, are we safer? So then my question is, why would, like, even the mass murders, they're horrible. Nobody don't want to, okay, let's get something straight. Mark said it don't want people shot nowhere for no reason unless they're trying to do something Mark said it. Now, my point is I don't want people shot and killed in the streets. But when I look at the fact that the statistics show our cities are safer in the last 20 years than they are dangerous. They're just safer. But we feel, why is it that, back to my issue about emotion energy, why do we feel they're more dangerous? Why do we feel that? It's like a collective anxiety. People are trying to buy more guns, find more security to put on their cars, and their houses, all kind of stuff. Most people's houses do not get broken into. Let's stop it. They just don't. It ain't happening. Like, I know most of my friends have not had a break-in in the last year in their homes. None of them. And only a handful of them have some kind of monitoring devices on their homes, more less than you think. And none of them knew when they could say, well, my alarm went off, and they showed somebody was trying to pry in my window. Does it happen? Yes. But remember, big business always works on your fears. But what about tomorrow? But what if? What if? You don't want to get caught in the rain. You don't want to get caught in, left in the cold. So then, bye. Keep the engine going. They always talk about war and how war is good for business. More trucks, electronics, all kind of stuff is sold more when we're in war. Increase more anxiety. 9/11 took place. People start buying all kind of anything they could buy to feel safe. They were worried now. Ooh. Now think about the chances that if you hit a place that devastatingly, so now they're going to go stop blowing up all the cities in the United States because that's what they worry about. And then anybody that had a beard, anybody that had a different skin tone, I mean, we were tripping. Collective angst. And some people say, well, that's justifiable. Okay, but it's also good for business. It's good for business. And I think about smoke and mirrors again. Looking at that show, what does anybody ever say, well, what is it? Is there a benefit to us being over-anxious? Because most people say it's just horrible, it's not good. But somebody benefits off of your anxiety every day, whether it's the drug companies, whether it's the liquor stores, whether it's the gun stores, whether it's the security places. Somebody benefits off of us being overly anxious. And I just wonder if anybody thinks about that, so to speak. Why, so when you feel, quote-unquote, unsafe, why do you feel unsafe? Like, does anybody stop and say, why am I feeling like this? Because anybody that's had anxiety attacks, they know an anxiety attack is the feeling that some peril is taking place when there's no evidence of any peril taking place. So I feel like I'm having a heart attack. I am not having a heart attack. I feel like I'm about to lose my balance. I'm standing straight up on 10 toes. It's an irrational response to a feeling. And many doctors talk about it being overstimulation and different things. Sleep deprivation could be part of it. It could be post-trauma, meaning trauma that took place at another time, and now our memory of that trauma or some kind of quote-unquote trigger. But all of it is still based upon the fact that whatever you're anxious, nothing is going on right now. It's not now. It's not based in the now. So your fear is irrational. So if a dog is coming at me and my heart races, that would be called rational fear. If I'm standing in the middle of the street and my heart feels like it's racing and I have no physical problem and there's nobody chasing me, that's called irrational. So we have more and more people being prescribed little pills and telling them to go to this place, that place, join this religion, do something because you're freaking out and we need help. And my thing is, well, is there something could anybody benefit off of a collective group anxiety? And so that's all I'm asking. I'm just asking. Because, if you saw that show, there were people that benefited off of this. the sleight of hand.
Well, like the drug companies and all other type of city agencies, and I mean, what's the laundry list?
Oh yeah. Well, think about it. Think about it. When times are bad, it gets crazy, and you ain't got money, more people run to casinos and play lottery. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And even though the chances are so slim, again, the provocateurs and those who profit off of mass anxiety. You know, mass anxiety. You know, and so you got people that feel good that because you feel bad.
You know,
and then we won't talk about that because that's a whole other issue. I thought about that. And one day we can have a conversation about that. Like, who are the terrorists in your life? Because actually,
the emotional terrorists.
Yeah, but you know, guess what? You know that there are people that are, and they might not even be, so here's the tripped out part about emotional terrorists. Some of them know that they are. Some of them are unwittingly pawns of their uncontrolled emotions. It's kind of like, and I'm using this, women, do not get mad. Do not write in. Do not send anything to me after I say this. But it's like a woman who has her period or is premenstrual, and let's say she didn't know anything about PMS. Let's say she didn't know. Let's say she didn't pay attention to the time of the month. She knew it came, but she really didn't pay attention. So when it started building up, she had no idea what it was, that she was feeling more crying, more irritable. Let's say she didn't know. And then she behaved the way she behaved, and she could not recall why. It was like she woke up out of a stupor, and when it was over, saying, what did I do? Why did I act like that? Okay? So let's say you have 40 years of, I don't know, cycles. So you would think, because I had a conversation with someone that told me this, Mark, believe it or not, we don't pay attention to it like that. So, like, for instance, like, so now I'm snapping on somebody because I'm highly irritable. But I'm not thinking like, you know what, it is that time of the month. So for me, I was saying it was hard for me to fathom that. But when she told me that, I said, okay, so then obviously that can happen. A person might not be aware. So then they can be terrorizing other people not aware. And I'm using that as an example because I don't believe that it's relegated to no woman at all. So imagine someone that knows what they're doing, and they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not happy. So you got the woman, example I'm using of a woman who had a period, who's not aware, who's terrorizing the people around her. But what about the person, they not having no period, they not having nothing, but they just ain't happy. And they haven't found a way to be happy.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about that individual.
Right. They're not happy. They're not happy. Because I think there's a lot of those. Because the thing about it, and I give most women, especially my age, somewhat credit when it comes to their cycles, because you all are aware. And especially if you're with a loved one, you kind of let them know. And if they've been paying attention, even if you didn't let them know, if they got enough months with you, enough months, not to mention years with you, they kind of know. Now, I still think that the woman owes it to herself, just for her own self, to be more aware of what's going on with her. But trust me, the people in her life, you know, and sometimes, you know, men, and not just men, I've heard women say this. See, here's the thing. As easy as you think men criticize women for having a period, women criticize women harsher. Because I heard women, yeah, she must be PMSing. I'm like, what? Okay. Yeah, she must be PMSing. You see, I see that work environments all the time. Why she? So that's the answer a woman would have to another woman's emotional shifts is PMSing? Well, it don't have to be that, because we know women that ain't, you know, come on, you ain't even having no more periods. And you acting, you know. And I know several. I know several that was just like, I had some experiences, man, the last 2 years with some women that I just was like, really? They don't have no periods. Hysterectomies, they done. Now, I know they told me that the body has some memory and there's still some vestiges of left over there, so you could still actually have like a phantom type of like you're having a period. Mm-hmm. But this, no. They by no means will they get off. These
well.
Ones.
Well, Mark, no. I don't want to say
off.
That, oh boy, I don't want to say that you know, I can't dispute the fact that women are hormonal at times, and we tend to emote at times.
Mm-hmm.
Let the record show that most of the time the stuff that we are emoting about, there's a good reason for it. So, you know, for all that stuff that you're talking about, we have to remember that there is good reason at times when and why we're emoting.
Well, that's a great segue for me. For the next thing that I was thinking about.
Oh, no,
is,
not the segue.
That's beautiful. So, like, we... Like we practice this. Okay. So this is what I feel. And I have this is what I feel about that. Emotions are realer, and I know I said realer, are realer than words. Meaning what is said and how one feels are sometimes at odds or not in line, and when a person feels to them in those scenarios or situations that they're feeling them in are real. And it makes me think about when a person goes to see a psychiatrist, psychologist, therapist, life coach, and one of the phrases, you know, they've done skits on Saturday Night Live and other places that of the therapist, and the stereotypical therapist, you hear them saying, so how do you feel about that? So how does that make you feel? And a lot of people, like, you know, feel like, oh, that's kind of like, you know, patronizing, but it has a legitimacy, because what most people who have been trained to look at folks who have dealt with emotional issues and things of that nature, they know this, that back to, like, I was talking about anxiety, a person's feeling about something is what has to be dealt with if you're going to get any level of clarity and stability. So before I try to get to whatever is quote-unquote real, I got to deal with those real feelings first. And so I know that it is very common to try to have a conversation that's an intellectual, rational, logical conversation for someone who is in a state of feeling and emoting, as you say. So what I know is that we have to be more aware and stop defending ourselves when put in a position to have to look at how someone feels. So Bree comes to me, says what she says. It's not unusual for me to want to say, but, why, whatever, as opposed to a very common therapeutic exercise, which is let people talk about how they feel, acknowledge that they feel that those feelings are, that they know those feelings are real, and that because they were willing to talk to them about how they felt about whatever it is. So like they say, I feel that you're an asshole. And you're like, okay. I hear what you're saying, that you feel like I'm an asshole. Now, again, I don't know how many people are really going to do this anyway, you know, sit down the process. Well, if somebody tells you, or let's say they don't say you feel like, they feel like you're an asshole, they feel like, I don't feel like you care about me. So now, let's say in your head is, but I know I care about her. Ah, so now what do I do? Because that's the first, that's the logical, rational thought that comes to a person's head when someone says to them, especially if they know that they feel they do anyway, you don't care about me. You don't love me. And any other you don'ts. I feel you don't love me. I feel you don't care. What do you do with that?
Well, there's usually a reason why someone gets to that place, and I'm not going to put that, I'm not going to place a gender on it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually someone gets to that place is because they feel as though they're not getting the response that they need from the person. If a person is not, for instance, I'll give you a perfect example. You have two people, and they are very much alike in personality-wise. One of their similarities, one of their the things that ties the bind between the both of them is that they're both stubborn. One is feeling away because they got stuff going on in their life, so the other one says, oh, well, since you got stuff going on in your life, I'm gonna give you a little space to handle that stuff. Because they know if they allow themselves to feel a way or to talk about it, it may come across irritating to the other person. But, hence, they have allowed several weeks to pass. They didn't really call. They didn't text. And then they happen to cross paths. Now, the person that was going through stuff and, you know, they say to the other person, oh, it's your fault that we haven't talked because you didn't call me. Well, sometimes that person doesn't feel like they always want to be doing all the calling, all the planning, all the talking, all the initiating, all the, you know, it comes a time when,
said,
you know,
look what you just said.
It's an imbalance.
Look what you just said. You said they feel. They feel like. And so remember this. Remember this. They feel like to them means that it is. See, that's one thing, that's the biggest part that I'm talking about. So when a person says they feel like, they're telling you that's how they see things right now. And so then how do we work through that? Because, you know, it is very common, again, like I said, for the person that's hearing it to kind of go defense. You have to say it really nicely. It could be said nicely.
Yeah. Yes, with the inside voice.
It's the inside voice.
With the inside voice.
The voice I'm not good at using. You know, that's the voice I'm not good at using. I got to tell her. Everybody knows me like that, Mark. Boy, you know. So, yeah. But, yeah, the inside voice. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they say they feel, What could be good is this, if you can do it. Now, I don't know if you can do it, though, but because it depends on what you're feeling. Are you willing to do this? So Bree says, Mark, I'm feeling, and I say, well, is there something I could do? You know, first of all, I understand what you're telling me. And is this something that you would like me to do or that I could do so that maybe we can I can assist you in not feeling this way? Now, here's the thing. It's tricky to say something like that. It's tricky to do that. Let me tell you why. Because somebody out there listening land might even say, I'm kind of patronizing, Mark.
I was just about
you
to say that.
Me.
It could be construed as being that.
Oh, yeah. So that's why I think you got to be careful.
But you know what?
I
think for a lot of women, we would like for to be patronized once in a while. You know, patronize me. You know, at least
right.
I know you're trying to be, you know, creative with how you, with your attempt to want to understand or try to fix, you know?
Well,
just,
Well, see, that's our other thing, though. The whole other thing is, we know, I wasn't even going to the man and the woman point, but the man and woman point is, we always end up in that way because I am convinced. Enough experiences can have convinced me in my unscientific analysis that when it comes to emotion and out of the blue hitting you upside your head with stuff, women are way farther more adept at presenting emotional situations out of the blue, catching you off guard. Whether we should be or not, but men can attest they have. Women don't get men in that. You don't know too many men that have just done a lot of emotional surprises on you, probably. You might. I don't know. I'm not saying. I'm just saying I don't know too many. Because one of the biggest problems with us, I would say, if there's a problem, not a problem with us, but how we kind of construct it, and we're less likely to do that. Usually, if we're upset about something, it's kind of like simple anyway. You know we're upset. You know, because we're kind of in a present type situation. When you say some stuff, we boom with it. You know, it's not kind of like you wondering a lot of times. Now, yet if there's a man want to call in and say, man, you don't know how I hold on to stuff and I brood. Okay. You might, again, I know. That's why I'm always careful of saying I don't like to use the word all men or, we don't say all men because we use the word men or women. When we do that, the statement in itself suggests that that's how they, quote-unquote, are, or those people are, so to speak. But I'm speaking of the small sample of individuals that I have had the opportunity to interact with that are females. I see it. And I have been told on more than one occasion that I... and that I'm insensitive.
Ah.
So, again, when someone tells me, well, see, again, the whole
this
issue
year?
Is,
this year? Last year? Was it? Did it happen this year? Last year?
2 years ago.
Okay. 2 years ago. Oh, okay.
Not 2 days ago, well, maybe 2 days ago. But anyway, I don't know. But yeah, 2 days. Yeah. You know. So I know I have a good heart. I know that I have a good heart. But so that means that if I have a good heart, then good-hearted people can be insensitive. So when a person tells me I'm insensitive.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? And that's always your comeback when we tell you that you're insensitive. I don't know how you can say I'm insensitive because I have a good heart. I know I'm a good person. I have a good heart. I'm like,
Not me. No, that's definitely not me. I know that ain't me. I don't do that because usually I can go in on how was I insensitive. That's usually where I go. I know it.
Uh-huh.
So, and then I go, and then I can take it to the next step of you call that insensitive. So then I might even take it to the place where, really? You know, I might not say it that way, but usually I'm not going to say I'm the most care, but I know this much, that I know that I'm a person that is not a mean-spirited, don't give a damn about people person. I know that. However, I also understand that I may not always acknowledge various social cues or conversational cues or physical gestures in such a way that may be a little more delicate. It's kind of like if you ask somebody to scratch your back and they start digging in, and you'd be like, damn, wait a minute. And then they say, well, you asked me to scratch your back. I said, I ain't asking to draw blood. So let's say sensitivity levels. They may, you know, somebody say you're stronger than, you know, you may not be aware of. It's kind of like Baby Huey. I don't know if you remember Baby Huey, but Baby Huey was a baby and just happy-go-lucky, but heavy-handed and could be kind of tough and rumble because his level of sensitivity in that those scenarios were not – he didn't adjust his level of sensitivity because he was not as aware that he was being heavy-handed. So I think that's the thing. It's like when people come to you with certain things, it is really important for you to acknowledge, not defend, not berate, not diminish, acknowledge. And then what can we do about this? Because you feel it. So if you feel it, then it's real. And I'm assuming you don't like the way you're feeling. And I say it's nice if you can get this because I'm going to tell you, a lot of people might not even tell you how they feel. And then you just see behavior. And then Bree don't answer the phone no more and all that kind of other things.
What?
See, I was checking if you were paying attention.
I'm always paying attention. Please.
But no, I'm just, you know, I'm saying you feel a certain kind of way, and because of that feeling, now you ain't answering the phone no more. You ain't, whatever it is, because now you felt whatever.
Oh, like going out to dinner with somebody.
Like going out to dinner. Right.
Yeah.
Like going out to dinner, and the situation takes place that was not how you thought it would be, and now you got a feeling about that.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. Well, let's take a scenario that could be looked at. So let's say a gentleman asks you to go out to dinner with them. You go out to dinner with them, and when you go out to dinner with them, you have a good dinner. And as you come to the conclusion of the dinner, you realize at some point that you are being asked to foot the bill, or you're part of the bill. Or that this is a Dutch situation. This is not a whatever. And so now you feel something about it. Now, again, those are your feelings. It's not even about, see, some people want to make it right or wrong, but let's just say that's just how you feel. And so because of that, though, let's say you don't tell them how you feel. Let's say you just pay it. Get in the car, go home, and never be heard from again. You don't answer the phone. You're done. Now, I know people like that.
Okay, are you asking me a question or are you asking me a question or are you?
No, I'm not asking anything. I'm just making a statement. I'm saying that a person can do that. And now, you know, she disappears. Or he disappears, whatever the case may be, one of the other, the one that felt that it didn't go their way.
Firstly, here's the thing. I don't feel as though you should ask someone to go out to dinner, ask them to make a suggestion for the restaurant, but then when the check comes, you're tallying up what they ate and said, oh, you drank wine, and what else did you have? I don't think that's appropriate. If you ask somebody out to dinner, you should be paying.
But wait a minute, let's not go there because this.
Especially if you're a man. That's right.
Well, here's what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is, so now you just said how you felt. So that's, if you were in a situation like that, then that means you had feelings about it.
Oh, yeah.
And with those
I have
feelings.
I can tell you what the feelings are.
So just to keep it on the subject of feelings, and so if you did say something like that to the person, let's say that unbeknownst to the person, that's what was going on. And let's say for whatever number of reasons, they thought it was okay for that situation to take place the way it did. So let's say there was no malevolence, there was no level of dereliction of duty. I mean, they thought it made sense. They did. Okay. So now
I don't understand how you can think that it makes sense to ask someone to go out to dinner and when the check comes, because you're making an assumption that they have money.
Well, wait a
and,
minute. Wait.
You know,
but to not go so much, because see, what I'm talking about is, I'm just using the example to say, okay, now you tell the person how you felt about what they did. And let's say, regardless of why you thought they should know, let's say they didn't look at it that way for whatever reason.
They didn't look at it.
Now they're presented with the opportunity, because now you come to them in this state that's very emotional, let's say.
No.
They are somewhat like, okay, surprised. Because let's say they didn't have the same social or cultural orientation that you did, so to speak, on that particular issue. But let's say they cared about you. Then what kind of response could they have once they know they offended?
Is this where I'm supposed to chime in?
Yeah, what in your mind, what would be an appropriate way of handling a situation if the person, meaning you were taking the other person's position now and you realize that you did something that the other person felt some kind of way about?
Okay.
How do you respond to that?
How you respond is being honest, especially if you like the person. See, if you don't like the person and you don't think you're ever going to see them or talk to them again, it may not even be worth having the dialogue. Or if you know that you're not going to see them again, but you kind of like them enough to want to give them some learning, wisdom to move forward with, because obviously we're not going to move forward together. I mean, it's the same thing like I told our listeners 2 years ago when I told the story about the guy that came to my house 3 times empty-handed.
Right, not even a bottle of Coke in his hand. Right.
So your
cultural orientation or his concept of what was okay was different than yours. So at that point, you addressed it, and then it happened again.
Exactly.
And then, so you addressed it, then it happened again. But I want to, just for the
no,
sake
I
of
didn't that, address I didn't, it. No. Wait, hold on now. I did not. Are you talking about the guy or the person that? The dinner.
No, I know what you did. That was different, right? I know, but no, I'm talking about the one that came to the house and you kept. Because I remember we had this whole conversation about
right. The
you,
bill.
Yeah,
I told him to go on Amazon.com and get the box set of the Cosby Show and look at the whole 9 years that the series was on NBC and then get back at me because. I mean, that's just home training. I'm sorry. I don't care what ethnic background you have. Most cultures believe in being hospitable when you go to someone's house for the first time or when you go to someone's house for dinner, for a birthday party, for a housewarming. You know, you don't go to people's houses empty-handed.
Bree, what I'm asking you is, though,
okay.
Back to the subject that we're talking about, let's say you are the offender. You're the person. Of course. But let's just say you are the person that missed the social cue, didn't pick up on whatever it is, and it's being brought to your attention. How do you handle it? Well, someone tells you.
You'll be apologetic, and you assure that person that it was not done intentionally. It was not done with malice. That's what you would do. But see, on
now,
the
remember,
flip side of that, that's not what happened. See, that's not
oh, no,
what
no,
happened.
I understand that. Yeah, I get that. But kind of like what we were talking about, I think about this whole issue of patronizing. So I'm saying because I think all of us have been in situations where we were told that someone had a feeling a certain way about something we did or said. And we when we heard it, we did not, let's say we didn't agree with it or we didn't see it that way, but that's not the point.
You know what the point is, Mark? The point is if you're going to ask somebody to go out to dinner and you're expecting for them to pay their, and you're expecting for them to pay their share, let them know before they leave the house that this is what you're expecting them to do.
Is this something you want to talk about there?
No. I'm just saying. You know, I'm not trying to.
I'm kind of feeling some kind of way now.
Listen, I don't want your feelings to get all injured. But no, this is real talk here. It's important to communicate. That's the problem that we have as human beings on this earth surface, walking around. We are not communicating with one another. Clearly,
so you know,
they're not doing
it. You know that I disagree with that. You know I disagree with that.
Well, I don't care that you disagree. I don't particularly care that you disagree. I'm telling you what my experiences have been.
No,
I'm telling you that incident with that individual, that was a little too much for me. Only because that wasn't the first time it happened. That was like that was the third time it happened in a 6-month period. I'm like, okay, is this going to be a trend? Because this is what, the first time it happened, it was a larger amount. It wasn't just a dinner at an Italian restaurant, about $100 or a little under $100. I'm talking about a larger number. And, you know, this person kind of looked like sideways. And I'm like, look, if you didn't have money for this excursion, this was a conversation we needed to have a week or two ago when I told you that I was planning to do this and if you wanted to come along. Because if I knew that I had to put out additional money, it's okay, but I just want to know that in advance, because the money, the extra money I might have had with me might have been for something else. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I tell people all the time, don't be in my pockets, because my pockets belong to Glenn Jr. My pockets don't belong to you and you and you and you. My pockets belong to Glenn Jr., and he knows how to exercise his access extremely well. Okay? That was an event that happened this weekend that was shocking to me. And the person's response was, because he knew I felt here we go with our feelings, right? I felt a way about something.
Okay, Bree.
I have to say this. He said to me.
But what I want you to do for the listeners is this. We got to back it up because I'm thinking if I came in, I'm confused. I don't know what's going on with you just talking about. So I think you need to go ahead. I wasn't thinking we were going to talk about it, but I definitely want to.
I did not want to.
Yeah, well, you threw it out there now.
I did want to talk about it now.
What happened this weekend, Bree? Break it down. What happened this weekend?
Okay. Oh, my. Well, this weekend. I mean, it's no secret to our listeners that, you know, I'm single. So being single, I date. and the longer I'm single, the more that I find that I am kind of glad that I am single, because the things that are happening, you know, ordinarily as of late, I know how to look inward and say, okay, what nickel in this dime that I have in this, you know, what accountability should I take out of this? But some of these things I can't take no type of responsibility, so I just refused to. But anyway, I went out to dinner with a gentleman friend of mine, and when the bill came, he started tallying up what I had for dinner. And I didn't know that that's what he was doing at first until he said, "You had a glass of wine, right?" So I looked at him like, "What are you doing?" He was like, "Well, you know, I'm just trying to figure out what I had and what you had." I said, "So we're going Dutch?" And he was like, "Well, yeah." I said, "Okay." So my money out. And, you know, I was so pissed off. I looked at the bill and I saw what the bill was, and I just put, I mean, the bill came up to like $55 with a $10 tip. It was $65. I put a $50 bill on the table, and I got up, put my coat on, and started walking towards the door because I'm bubbling, okay? And I want to get out of this public space as soon as possible. So head to the door, walk out the door, get in the car, and he gets in the car. And as soon as he gets in the car, I looked at him, and I used some four-letter words. Yes, people, Bree does use four-letter words from time to time.
Love. You said love how many times?
That wasn't it.
Love wasn't a four-letter word?
No.
Wow.
Duck is
okay.
A four-letter word, but it rhymes
duck?
With duck.
like duck,
like,
duck, goose?
Yeah, goose, get up and get the hell out of here. I was like, you are cheap, and I can't take being around a cheap, stingy person. I can't do that. And, you know, the question was, if you were going to ask me to go out to dinner and things is tight for you, say, you know, what are you thinking about eating? Because, you know, money is a little funny, you know, as long as we can keep it low budget or whatever, because I'm a real person, you know, just talk to me. He didn't say that. He just was like, "What you doing?" "Nothing." "Okay, I'll be ready at 7 o'clock. I'll come through and get you." "Okay, I'll be ready." Put my fly outfit on, fly shoes on, nice handbag, and walk out the door, thinking that I'm going to have a nice evening. And everything was nice until that bill came. Now, $65 right now for me, I'm not pressed for that. That's not the point. The point was he did not exercise the good sense that God gave him to say, you know what? I'm not in his pocket, so I don't know what the deal is. I'm going to say it was either choice one, things was tight for him, and I better communicate with Bree that things is tight with me this week, and we might have to either go Dutch or, you know, do a low-budget dinner or whatever. Or two, which I'm leaning very heavily towards the latter, just plain damn cheap and stingy. I'm sorry. I was extremely disappointed. That ruined my whole night. And again, I don't want the brothers out there to be talking about, "Oh, Bree, that's messed up. You just want a brother to be putting out all his money for dinner." No, because Bree ain't hungry like that. Bree is not hurting for dough like that. Bree is all right. And as a matter of fact, Bree is on a diet. Bree go to the gym every day. So Bree can't be eating Italian food.
Shout out to Planet Fitness. Go ahead.
That's right, Planet Fitness every day, sometimes two a day, all right? So the one night a week that usually is either Friday or Saturday night that I say, okay, for all this hard work and sacrifice, I'm going to have me one meal or one day a week that I just, you know, do my thing and eat what I want to eat. And thank God I knew that I was paying for my meal after I ate it, because before then or sometime during dinner, I might still have indigestion. That's all I'm saying. Bree said it. That's it.
Well,
terrible. Well, it was a terrible date. Which led into a whole nother conversation. And it's just clear that you know, these...
You said that you did this before. You said this is not the first time, so therefore, you know, some might want to know, you know, what's up with Bree.
Well, what's up with Bree is that Bree is understanding that people may be on hard times, because real talk, Bree had hard times for a long time, okay? So I don't put my nose up at people that are going through something, because I know what it's like to be going through something and people look at you sideways and treat you differently because you're going through something. But see, that's not the case here, you know? And for me, all I needed was communication, because if it was just a fact, if things was tight, I would have been like, okay, you know what? We got Seamless and Grubhub. Let's go on one of those online internet restaurant delivery service sites and find something in our price point, get a couple of DVDs, and chill for the rest of the night. And that would have been okay with me. But now I got to go through the exercise of, you know, flat ironing the hair, putting makeup on, my outfit, my shoes, go down the stairs, get in the car, drive way across Brooklyn to go to this, one of my favorite restaurants, mind you. Ambiance, the food is off the hook. Delicioso good, and then have to go through that. I don't know, Mark. I just feel like, you know, the brothers ain't talking the way they need to talk. They're not being honest about their situations and circumstances. Or, you know what? Here's another thing. Here's the third option, which kind of is a little disheartening, but, you know, it's also something to be considered. First of all, my father told me that a man puts his money and his time where his heart is. So if old boy couldn't even buy me dinner, what is that saying about what he might be feeling about me? And if that's the case, well, since we're talking about feelings, what the hell are you wasting my time for going out on Saturday night?
Well, I mean, there's a fourth option too, you know. But
okay, what might that be?
Well,
what
and again,
might that
when
be?
I say this, and I actually, and I want to preface this: this is not about putting Bree on blast. This is not about Bree per se, but it is about this: what is it about you that drove a guy like that? Or if you drew more than one guy like that, because some people like to say this again, and I'm saying that,
I'm clearly not saying you.
I am not talking about you personally, but I'm saying this one thing about the fact that
but if
you have a number of guys that you have drawn that have not been up to par for whatever the reasons are, and God forbid that several of them did similar things. The first thing that could be said is, where are the guys that can step up to the plate?
Well, that's only happened to me twice.
Okay,
twice.
Fine. But I'm just saying.
Never had that happen to me before. This is phenomenon.
But another question that could be asked is, why do you draw guys that don't step up to the plate? Because I remember you told me this before. You said this to me, you know, I am no longer out here looking for somebody. I have a girlfriend. But prior to having a girlfriend, you always said to me about different dates because we talked about our dating life together and we shared many things.
Every time Mark says that he admits to having a girlfriend, I have to allow the audience to give applause because we know where Mark said it was 2 years ago. If you don't know, this is the first time you listen to the show, just go back to the Bree Life Radio archives of 2012, and you'll get a better snapshot of what I'm talking about. But please continue, Mark.
Anyway, so, you know, you told me, you know, that something about to the effect of the kind of women that you must like those kind of women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something to that effect. And so, basically, this is nothing that, you know, again, I had to hear.
I'm not taking this personally, but here's the thing. You know, the ownership that I will take for the access that person has to me, because we've known one another for 37 years. This is like one of my oldest and dearest friends that I happen to have been dating on and off for the last year and a half, and it has not been easy, but, you know, he's a good dude, but I'm seeing some other, but you see, as time passes, you tend to learn some things about a person, and you got to figure out, you know, does this work for you? If it does, fine. If it doesn't, then, you know, it's time to move around. You just got to stay tuned.
Well, like I said, I mean, I don't, you know, I just think that, you know, we draw a lot of things and have a lot of things happen in our lives that we have something to do with. And the reflection that the person is, that may be, that we're sitting in front of may be a reflection of us.
Don't even go there with that.
They are who they are, but we chose to be in their company. We chose to have the access. And, of course, we could be blindsided, but for all those times we weren't blindsided, that means we were sitting in front of somebody that we saw.
Exactly.
And for whatever reason, we chose to keep sitting there. For whatever reason, if it's long friendships, good looks, loneliness, whatever the case may be. We sat there. And it's not uncommon for after we stop sitting there for us to say things that are not so kind about the person, whatever the case may be. But,
well, see, here's the thing. He knows that I have a show, and he knows that I tend to talk about the things that happen to me throughout the week on the show. And he's listening right now. So, see, that's the good thing about our friendship is that we don't always say we're not the kind of friends that just say things because, you know, or we're concerned about injuring the other's ego or our feelings. We first are real with one another. I would like to think that. I don't think he was very real this past weekend, which
Maybe he was real this weekend.
Or maybe he was being real stingy,
Maybe he was really in his feelings, and that's how he really felt about that he should do things.
I believe that. I definitely believe that, because he tends to behave that way. And but that's cool. You know, I still love him. He's still my very good friend, but, you know, I'm looking at some things, as well as you should always look at some things. You look at some things and realize, you know, if this is the person you want to continue to sit in front of in this capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, let's segue. I have a segue.
segue is...
Well,
I have something I kind of want to talk about. You talked the first half of the show. There's one other thing I would like to talk about.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if our listeners, especially our East Coast listeners, the ones that are in the New York City metro area, was looking at the news today or have been actively on Facebook. If they were, and I put this on my personal Facebook page, a rat was on, I think, the A or the C train. I think it was the A or C train. Oh, my goodness. This is the reason why I do not, or I try, I try not to ride the subway at all. I'm claustrophobic, and I am deathly afraid of rodents. Oh my goodness! You should see this thing running back on the forward on the A train. It's crazy. And what I want to know is, what are they doing about exterminating down there? I mean, I know they got alligators and tigers and lions and bears, oh my, down there. But they really, I mean, when the rats are coming up on the train, and this is like the third or fourth time this year that someone has posted a video of the rats riding the trains with the strap hangers, as they call them here in New York. It's crazy, Mark.
I see. It I don't know. I mean, you know, there's a lot of rats in New York City.
Yeah, some are big as dogs. Some as big as small dogs. Terrible. Just want to throw
that
out there. Yeah.
Well, you know, we were talking, if anybody saw online, you know, when I post what the show is going to be about today, I talked about that dream person. We've talked about the dream person before, and I just thought it was kind of like part of an ongoing conversation, so I want to talk about it again today.
Oh, so, Lord. Will this also segue into the PTRD?
Well,
what did we say it was? PTRD, right? Yeah.
Post-traumatic relationship disorder.
Uh-huh.
And the whole thing of the dream person is quite interesting because I kind of want to take it to another level, and it's this. So what happens when you are the person that has the dream person in mind, and the person you're with is not the dream person, and you've come to the conclusion that maybe I can't have my dream person, how do you feel about not having your dream person, number one? Number two, how do you feel about the person that you're with not being the dream person? I ask this because I wonder, three options came to my mind. Either you change the dream, like you wake up or you go to sleep, you have a different dream. The dream, the person that's sitting in front of you changes into that dream person. Or you continue your pursuit and you nix the guy that you're with or girl that you're with, or you hold on to him until Prince Charming or Cinderella comes along. So what do you do with it? You know, because I think about the Langston Hughes poem. You know, The Dream Deferred. I don't know if people remember The Dream Deferred. That was one of my favorite poems, but it really was addressing the brown Black people's predicament in America. And for those who don't remember A Dream Deferred, I could tell you what it says. It says, what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun or fester like a sore and then run? Does it st- stink like rotten meat or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet. Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? And what this poem says to me, even though it's about a different situation, it does talk kind of to me about the whole idea of when you want something and you desire it a certain way. What do you do with it? What do you do with the desire to have whatever it is you want? And in this case, a certain guy that does a certain thing that says a certain thing, or a girl that looks a certain way that says a certain thing, whatever. What do you do when you have not found that person, haven't been able to have that person, or let's say you realize you had the person, they're gone, whatever the case may be. What do you do? I mean, can you, do you think you could be okay with the non-dream guy, a non-dream girl in your life that you have now? Or do you constantly reflect on where they are? When will they come? Will I be able to have them? Because, I mean, like he says, what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Because it might, because, you know, that could be the case. It might dry up. Or at the end of the poem, that was the first thing you said at the end of it, or does it explode? You know? Does it sag like a heavy load? Or does it explode? So what do we do with the dream person? Because it's kind of like when you talked about the person should know this, should know that, should know. And then somebody else might add should do. And then somebody else will say should be. And now the person you in front of you is not. But you might say, but I like Johnny. He's good in bed, or he's a good conversationalist, or he's whatever good you can find in him. Because Janice is nice and she cares about me and she cooks really good, or whatever the case may be. Which it's kind of like you start writing a list of whatever their virtues are because you know what they don't have already. You know what they aren't already. That's why you're making a list of what they do have. Because you're trying to find a good enough reason to stay aligned with them based upon what they do have, because you know what they don't have, because you would rather that they had it, you know. And then some of us could say that, you know, to be honest, it's a hodgepodge of you, because you do have stuff that the dream man has or the dream girl has. And, but you don't, and I always laugh because I always said, you know what, the dream person was going to be that person that I was with, that I laid next to and had a dream next to that night. That was my dream person. So if I chose you, then you was the one. Because I'm not a dreamer like that, so to speak, when it comes to a person. Because I'm looking for the click. I'm looking for the connection. I ain't worried about all that stuff. And that's why I don't hear a whole lot of people talk about the dream woman. I hear more people talk about the dream man. And because I'm wondering if more women do this than men. You know, I don't know. Because what do you think? You think more women do this?
Well, it's funny that you should be talking about this very subject at this moment. A friend of mine on Facebook, his question was, and this kind of segues into the discussion, is it okay to befriend the opposite sex if you're in a committed relationship? And my answer to both your question about the dream person and his question about being friends with the opposite sex outside of your relationship is that we have to be realistic in the fact that whatever we're dreaming about may not always manifest itself. So we have to take stock of the things that are important to us about the other individual and say, okay, I have 10 things that are really important to me in there, and out of 10 of those things, 7 of them are non-negotiable, and this individual meets all 7 of those criteria, with the potential maybe even to satisfy all 10, but right now he's a strong 6 or 7. Well, you know, sometimes you, again, let me finish, though.
The Michael Kors bag, I like my Michael Kors bag, but it's not a Hermes Birkin bag, and it can't turn into one.
Okay.
It can't turn into one, and I want an Hermes Birkin bag. I know I do. Michael Kors is cool, though, but it ain't an Hermes Birkin bag. And most people would agree that know about bags and know about the business and the industry and fashion to say, you're right. and it's a fraction of the cost. So what do you do when you know you want a Birkin bag? And you got a Michael Kors.
Okay. Again,
you should be realistic.
We have to be realistic. We have to be realistic. We have to be realistic.
Oh, boy, that's funny.
I have never, I mean, I've been fortunate in my lifetime to have experienced being deeply in love with one person and loving another. And Each one of these men, they were not perfect. They were not, and I don't know that I have a dream person. For me, there are just some things that are important for me to have in order to function and to remain committed in the relationship, to remain present, you know? And as long as you are meeting those things, then we got to, that's a winning combination. If I'm meeting your criteria and you're meeting mine, that's a killer combination there. And we
sounds
like
right.
One another, you know?
Man.
So
and we like one another?
Yeah. So,
and
I mean,
like
you got to, and we like one another. See, because, you know, by divine right, by divine order, our Creator built us, designed us. Excuse me, in love. So that is our divine right to have the expectation to be in this atmosphere and be loved. But we don't have to be liked by another individual. Everybody don't have to like us. When you find somebody that like you, that can look at you in your craziness and be like, oh my God, he's this, he's that. He's irritating sometimes. He talks too much, you know. But you know what? I get him. And not only do I get him, I like him. That is what is a killer combination. They're meeting each other's needs. And on top of that, we like one another. Because like will turn into love over time if you do the work, if you're present. If you're real, and if you continue
well,
to like meet
turns,
each other's
you
needs.
You say light turns into love.
Light can turn into love. Not all the time, but, you know, it can.
I got to talk about that on another show. Light turning into love. Okay. Cool. I'm writing it down in my notebook right now. Because I want to talk about that, like turning into love. Yeah.
So,
okay.
So, I mean, it's interesting because, like I was going to say about this person's question on Facebook about, is it Is it okay to befriend the opposite sex if you're in a committed relationship? Well, which segues to the closure of the perspective that I have, and that is that we all are not going to be everything to one another. I mean, our interactions, our connection, our vibration with one another is not going to be all-encompassing and is not going to provide every individual need that we have for growth and wisdom and learning and experience and all of that. And that's what being a participant in the world space is all about. We're supposed to be able to connect and communicate with one another. And as long as we're doing that appropriately, it's cool. Because that dream person that you're referencing, I don't know what that person looked like. I don't know that I don't know that I ever thought about a dream man. Because any time I ever allowed myself to be in a relationship, and I've been in four of them, again.
You wanted to be there. You liked the person.
I wanted
to.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Okay. He worked for however long a time it was. The first one was 7.5 years. The next one was 9 years. The next one was 3 years. And the next one was a year. Whatever that period of time was when things were optimal, I was present, and I was present by choice, and that person was present by choice.
So here's a question for you: how many married people do you know right now?
Not many. I'd say less than a dozen. Maybe it's okay. Realistically, I know half dozen married couples.
Well, and the reason I'm asking is because I want to send a shout out to my Beck. You might want to put applause on my girlfriend. I'd like to say that. You want to hear applause?
Oh,
in?
The beautiful Miss Wanda.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Her parents just this weekend celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary.
Mm. Oh, my goodness. Wait a minute. That deserves a... Wait. Woo!
So here's the... So let me ask you a question. Why was your response, woo, tell me why. Please tell me why.
Because I know how it was to be with one person for 9 years. And how much work went into that, and how much sacrifice, and how much just goes into yourself. So, you know, even though mine did not end, I mean, mine ended not well, and it was a lot of animosity, a lot of ill feelings for a long time until we got over ourselves. But, you know, I know what work and how much work it took to get to that point. So 50 years, that is an enormous accomplishment. And really, when I think about that, those are too selfish because to especially, you know, they've gone through some major changes. When you think about what's transpired in our world in the last 50 years, and I'm assuming that they're both people of color, they're both African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
You know,
they're
they've gone
black.
Through, they have gone, and I'm assuming, if I remember correctly, your girlfriend is from the South, Louisiana or someplace like that?
Yeah.
So
Metairie, right outside New Orleans.
Right. So she grew up in the South. Her parents were in the South during the Civil Rights era, you know, and dealing with racism far before that. You know, there are a lot of dynamics and pressures that can contaminate a relationship between a man and a woman, or a husband and a wife, when there are stresses in the world that seeps into their home life. Trust me. So they've dealt with 2-3 wars through civil rights movement, the women's live movement. They've dealt with integration and all types of stuff. That they're to be commended. And the only way, and they'll tell you, I don't know them, but I'm sure a part of their success is that they had a very good understanding on how one another flowed and how, and they respected one another in that. Because there's no way that you can gravitate towards through 50 years and not have some kind of understanding about the person that's to the left of you, the right of you, up underneath you, on top of you. There's no way. They really, they accepted each other in their space and time, and that's how they got to the 50 years. Oh my goodness.
Well, before I go any further, I'm just gonna send a shout out.
I just like to round that off with a.
A shout out to Robert and Selena Paul, Metairie, Louisiana, 50 years of marriage. I mean, the reason I asked the question I asked you, though, is how many people you know married, and the next, it's how many people you know been married more than, I don't know, 15 years?
I know a couple.
A couple.
And see, here's the thing. You know, you could be married for a year or 50 years. All those years, it's how you're married to one another. You know, are you unhappily married or are you happily married? Are you
my thing is to be able to forget, in this day and age, though, people ain't staying.
Right.
You know,
because they're giving themselves that option that I talk about all the time.
Right.
You know?
So why would a person stay that long if they weren't happy anyway?
Oh, it happened. I met a guy 5 years ago. About 5-6 years ago. And his wife, after 35 years of marriage, packed up his stuff and told him to get out. She couldn't take it no more. And he was a dutiful father. He worked on the same job for about 30 years. He was a good provider. But he had some ways about him. And after me getting to know him a little better, I could really understand. I couldn't understand how she could even tolerate 35 years. I don't know that I would have been married to him more than 5 years with him behaving the way he did. So, you know, it's an individual choice.
But I'm saying, still, in this day and age, people are not exercising. Well, at least I don't. I mean, I wonder how many people are exercising that choice. I mean, how many people are staying married 30 years, 20 years? And like you say, you know a couple, but it sounds like when you say you know a couple, that means you know more that haven't been.
Yes. Absolutely. I know more that have not been married for more than 5 years.
Right, let alone 15.
Or no more than 10.
Right. So the Pauls of Metairie, Louisiana stay together for 50 years.
Right. I wish they could come on and tell us what the secret is. Dude.
I mean, my question is, even if they told us the secret, would we be willing to do what they say anyway? Because maybe...
You know what? I'm going to answer that question. In many instances, most men, and I've seen it on television, like, you know, you'll see a daytime television show and somebody will be on the show and they've been married 30, 40, 50 years and they get recognition on the show. And it's always the same question. What is the secret to, you know, your longevity of being married. And the man always says, happy wife, happy life. Or they'll say something like, whatever she says, I just say, yes, dear. And usually, and think about it, I never see any young men or men from, let's say from 50, from 25 to 50 that are married that have that ideology. It's always men who are 50 plus years old because they come from a different era.
So what's the ideology now? Because what's the ideology now?
The ideology is that they don't have no time for that. Who have time for that, you know? Ain't nobody got time for that, you know? They're not putting up. They're not tolerating. Most people don't have a lot of patience because, first of all, we're living in this technological age that information and just access to everything is like milliseconds. So, you know, we have this microwave perspective that, you know, if I can't get it over here, I can get it over there. If I can't do it this way, I can always try that way. You know, if being with a black woman doesn't work out, I can get a Filipino woman, I can get a white woman, I can get a Latino woman. I mean, and vice versa, women think the same thing. Change is constant. It always has been constant as time moves forward. But time moves forward in a different fashion now than it did 30, 40 years ago.
Well, but see, I guess my thing is, you said about men, but women, all statistics that I've seen, women initiate 2/3 of divorces. So men seem like they're willing to stay. They just seem like they are. They're not running to the court. So it seems to me women are far more willing to walk away than men are.
Yes.
And even when I think about my relationships, I didn't leave any of mine. And I don't know a whole lot of men that left their women. They may have stepped out, but they ain't leaving them. So
when you step out, you don't think that's cause to look at what a bigger problem is, and then if it can't be fixed, move around.
No, well, again, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, like I said, that 2/3 of divorces are initiated by women. So that means men ain't running out here trying to get a divorce.
No, they're not.
So. Part of, I would say, I don't know, just anecdotally, part of the reason why marriages are not staying together as long is because women ain't going to stay.
Uh-huh.
Women are not going to stay. They're not staying. I mean, I'm not saying they don't have a good reason to leave, but they're not staying. Because my question is, back in, I don't know, 50, 40, 60 years ago, was that an option women were going to exercise as much? And like you said, when you were talking about the eras that the Pauls had to go through, when the 70s hit, a lot of women, and granted it was a white woman that pushed it, but hey, I was looking at an old movie the other day, Claudine. You remember Claudine?
Yes, I do.
I was watching Claudine the other day, and I was just looking at how progressive these women, and Claudine was shot in 74-ish or something. It came out in 74-ish, and I think they were depicting even some time that was a little before 74. So I'm listening to the progressiveness in the conversation of these women in this movie, and I'm like, and I've seen Claudia. I own the movie, so that, and I've seen it before I owned it. And again, it amazes me every time I look at the movie that how progressive women were, even in as far as the, when the 70s hit. It's like they decided they were going to do something a little different. They still wanted a man, many of them. They still wanted a relationship, but what they were willing to do for the relationship and how long, what the duration was going to be, totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, should a person stay because of infidelity? It ain't about whether they should stay. I'm saying that they're not staying. It ain't about whether you should or you shouldn't. It's about they're not. It's about, it was a time when they did, though. That's what I'm saying. This ain't that time. And now they're leaving even when you're not. Because the relationships that I broke out of, that broke up with me, that I were in, I didn't commit any infidelity. So, you know, obviously, it could be other reasons. But I'm saying you're not going to stay. And I was married for 20 years.
Okay.
So, I mean, I broke the record for most of my friends in one relationship, you know. But, and like you said, you could be in a relationship that long and it not be groovy, you know.
Yeah, groovy.
Shout out to the 70s. Hey, shout out to the 70s. Groovy. Mm-hmm. Can you dig it? Right on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we didn't stay. We did not stay. You know, it's like, what was that song? It's a song that John Mayer had came out with, and he said, all we need is love was a lie, because we had love and we still said goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
So, which goes to another song that Tina Turner made, What Love Got to Do With It. So that means that you could even have love, but it ain't going to make you stay. Matter of fact, you could be waxing whimsical about how much you love someone that you're not with. You're not with them. So staying together is got more to do with willing than love. You have to be willing to stay.
Well, yes, and also you have to not give yourself the option to walk away, because people just think that, you know, I have options. Well, just because they're out there, that doesn't mean that you have to exercise them.
Well, that's why
How's about choosing to fix what's wrong, to be in it, to be fully committed? No one talks about making that choice. They just say, I could choose to go. Of course you can.
But again, that's why I say you have to be willing, because you talking about giving yourself a choice. You always have an option. You mean you don't have to give yourself the option. You have it. The only thing you do is either exercise it or don't exercise it. But you don't have the choice of having the option, because you're given the option. You always have an option. Just like, you know, the biblical phrase, choose ye this day whom you will serve. You always have an option. Now, you may not exercise that option, but you got it. So why are you willing not to exercise the option? Versus, why are you willing to exercise the option? And again, hey, everybody's got reasons, but I'm just saying it's a matter of will. As in, will you? You know, will you? But it's a matter of will, because you've got the choice. You have the option. Well, every contract got an option in it.
That's right.
Is that an option? So I just see that there was a time when people were not as willing to exercise the option as they are now.
Uh-huh.
And I wonder if women did it more. See, here's my thinking. If women exercise the option more now than they did, let's say, 50, 40, even 30 years ago, then could it be a reason that was based in some kind of level of fear that they don't have, that has been removed?
Absolutely, because times have changed considerably from 30 to 40 years ago. The women are independent, women are working, women are making moves that, you know, they didn't think or were not put in positions that they could make many years ago. So now, you know, the fear has been taken away of what's going to happen if I have to start all over. I mean, that's a fear that everyone goes through initially when they're deciding whether or not they're going to stay or go. When I decided to leave for a year, I was like, I'm staying, I'm going. But and when I said, well, I'm staying, usually 50% of the reason why I stayed was out of fear. Was out of fear because I didn't want to be displaced. I didn't want to displace my son. I didn't, and certainly, and most of all, I did not want to be in the singlehood having to deal with the whole dating all over again. Even though that wasn't like the most important thing going on at the time, but it was certainly one of the things that was like, nah, I really wish we could work this out because I don't want to be in that singlehood again because it's looking different than it was 10 years ago when I was single, you know? Please.
Mm-hmm. This is the singlehood. I like when you say that, the singlehood.
The singlehood, champ.
I live in that hood.
You ain't single no more.
I said, I lived in that
got your nose. You lived in it. Okay, yeah, past tense, because your nose is wide open.
Yeah, I
thank God bless her. let's give up. Let's do something nice. Lord have mercy.
Did I name the show the wrong? I should have named the show another name.
All right.
Lord have mercy, help you.
Well, listen, you just have no idea what, you know, you put a sister through for, you know, for 2 years. So I'm just happy. I'm happy for you.
Put a sister through. Lord have mercy. Like a brother didn't go through nothing.
Oh, what did you say? You said when I got married, you was going to give me away. Is that what you told me? You told me that one time, right?
Yes.
You said Glenn going to have to get out the way because you're going to give me away.
So before we go, because it's almost winding out, I'm going to say this, okay. I went to a concert this weekend.
Oh, yeah, the Mint Condition concert. How was it?
Mint Condition and Life Jennings and this group called Century. They're a local group here. But,
okay.
And they opened for them, whatever. And, you know, it was a really good concert. But, you know, what I noticed is Mint Condition is like they're an unbelievable band. And I always say this because, first of all, anybody that knows me well enough knows that I have a relationship with the band that you know, precedes them even becoming a band. You know, their Minneapolis band, and I came of age in Minneapolis. I'm from Chicago originally, but I moved to Minneapolis when I was like 25, so I was in the prime of my young adulthood, and I lived there for 20 years. And I'm a musician as well, so I got a chance to be in the quote-unquote Minneapolis music scene, which was a very vibrant music scene, especially during the time that I was there. because everybody knows the chief architect of the Minneapolis music scene is Prince. And then Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis subsequently after that, and Mint was even the backup band for Prince for a while, and they were signed to Jimmy and Terry's Flight Time, records or whatever. So in any case, I know the guys. Me and Homer actually had our recording studio in the same building for the longest. He's a guitar player. And me and Larry knew each other since we were 17. So I say that to say that I'm biased already, obvious. But that being said, I don't know any bands that have been together for over 20 years still making new records and have been making new records and have pretty much the original band intact minus one person. And it's hard when you talk about marriages. Being in a band that long is unbelievable. To stay together for more than 20 years. It's crazy. Crazy. 20 years. I think the first album came out in 95, something like that, where everybody knows the hit, Quit Breaking My Heart, Pretty Brown Eyes. And they did that last, which was cool. But the thing I was going to say real quick was that, Houston amazes me because, it's just like I watched how many people were leaving. They did almost a two-hour show. Music for music lovers. And it just amazed me how many people that were, you could tell, the diehard Mint Condition fans versus those who weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Like me, I knew all the songs. It was not one song that they played I didn't know. But I own all the albums. So definitely. But even if you didn't know the albums, the musicianship, just like for folks that like music, man, a Mint Condition concert, I tell everybody, go check Mint out. They come back, I'll be back. Definitely. Shout out to Mint Condition. But it was a great weekend. I had a great time at the concert. And, yeah, it was a beautiful thing. But, yeah, Mint Condition. That's all I had to say. And, I see our time is winding down, so it's been a blast. We've had some really pretty good shows in the last several shows have been really cool and not the most organized show in the world, but just very energetic, right? Good energy, good conversation, good insight, good entertainment. So I just thank everybody that have been listening in and who called in and everything. It's been a beautiful time. And again, inhale.
And breathe light.
And breathe light.
And breathe light.
See you next
light.
Tuesday. We'll talk
All
about
right.
it Tuesday. All right.
Yeah. A-Dream. In the building. Shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in.
Look.
We came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you the message.
So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down the next to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
Hey. We'll be right back.